American writer Scott Frost began his career as a screenwriter working on the cult TV series Twin Peaks and later The X-Files. But now he's a firmly established crime novelist with five books under his belt, including Run the Risk, which was nominated for an Edgar Award for Best First Novel. His latest is a thriller, Don't Look Back, and again features the character Detective Alex DeLillo, who's head of homicide in Pasadena in Los Angeles County. The book begins as DeLillo investigates the murder of a woman whose body is discovered frozen and wrapped in plastic. The only clue is the hand-drawn picture of a painting by Francisco Goya. The book shows Kate Piercy read Don't Look Back and found it truly creepy. So she asked Scott Frost about the importance of unsettling the reader.
I think it's very important for this kind of a book because it's what drives it, that intense curiosity about what's going to happen next. For me, it goes back to the old Hitchcock rule of when he would make his films, that if a person walking up to the door, if you showed what was behind the door, you lost all the suspense. You wanted to stay from the perspective of that person walking up to it.
But there's a difference between curiosity right. and creepiness.
Right.
And this book is creepy.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to make fun of violence. I want it to be real in that sense. And I want it to make the reader uncomfortable at times, frightened at times, and at the same time curious, because we are attracted to odd things as a species.
How much effort, though, goes into making something creepy as opposed to the suspense that comes from the plot?
I think one comes from the other. It just naturally arises out of the situation and apparently my somewhat disturbed imagination.
Although one of the big issues you tackle in this book is art.
Right.
And there are references to Goya's paintings throughout mm-hmm. the book, and that is interwoven as part of the plot.
Right.
And there's one painting in particular, Saturn Devours His Son.
Yes.
That is also truly macabre.
It is a truly creepy painting.
Some have spoken about that particular painting being part of a mental breakdown within Goya's own life.
Mm-hmm.
How much of creepiness is psychological, or was it purely a kind of technique or exercise in research and puzzle making?
Well, I think that painting in particular kind of encapsulated for my detective the search that was going to take place and how truly disturbed the person she was going after was or is. And it fit wonderfully with the kind of psychosis that Goya went through in his own life that matched my psychopath's problems and history. And the deeper she got into it, the more complicated it becomes, which I find to be the real search that she has to go through, if that makes sense.
Although the plot is quite complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have maps set out? How much effort goes into that aspect of it?
A lot of effort goes into it, and not very well organized. I approach a book like a cop would an investigation. I don't know what's going to happen on the next page. It would make it a lot easier if I did, but so I'm discovering the story the same way the reader is in the writing process. Occasionally I'll have little glimpses of what's going to happen, and I'll make notes. By the time I'm done with a book, my desk has started out clean, and when it's done, I have hundreds of pages of just loose paper stacked. When I think of something, I write it down, and I set it there, and I hopefully will be able to find it.
Well, it doesn't come across that way as the reader, haphazard.
Right.
It comes across as finely orchestrated.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
Yeah. As luck would have it. I don't mean to harp on it, but is creepiness essentially psychological then?
Oh, I think so, absolutely. Because it touches some nerve inside all of us. With the first book I did with this detective, it was the time of 9/11, and terrorism was everything about the world at that point. And what I realized I wanted to write about wasn't that kind of terror, but I wanted to write about the kind of terror that sort of grabs people's hearts and make it personal. And I think that's continued through all the books, that I want you to feel exactly what she's feeling, and that kind of fear and that kind of darkness.
Although part of the fear comes from a sort of emerging familiarity with the psychopath.
Yes.
And that's one of the other big issues of the book, sexual abuse within the church.
Yes.
And the psychological damage of the victim. I just wondered how much research or how much those kind of two issues, the church and art, were personal passions, or are they just something to research and use?
Well, I think not having been raised as a Catholic, I have that distance from it, but I have known many people who've gone through one form of that or another and have talked about the kind of baggage that you're carrying around the rest of your life. So it was something I deeply cared about, yet at the same time I didn't want to make it a book just about that. And the church is a wonderful foil in that way, because it's this institution that has been around for ages, that is encompasses every bright and dark point of history that any government ever has touched. And as I was writing the book, it came out that the Archbishop of Los Angeles was being investigated by a grand jury for fraud, I believe it was, in regard to the abuse cases that took place in Los Angeles. And it's an ongoing thing. Who knows when the real truth will come out about that period.
In the book, there are quite a few references, superficially at least, to Twin Peaks. The girl, the body is wrapped in plastic, the first body that's found. Mm-hmm. And there are letters and messages kind of embedded in the bodies of the victims. Mm-hmm. Is that a coincidence? Is that?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's hard to avoid that reference as someone who had worked on that show. But those are the things that I think every crime writer uses. I mean, you're going to have a body. You're going to have clues. You're going to have messages. So it's kind of hard to get away from that.
You're going to have fans reading into the storyline.
Yes, of course.
Although that phrase wrapped in plastic is almost like an icon of,
right,
of that show.
Yeah, I think it's unintentional. The show is so long ago for me that, in fact, all of us who had anything to do with it, it's kind of this weird distant memory that we occasionally see while channel surfing. It suddenly pop up. And in my case, it'll often involve seeing my father, who played the doctor on the show. So I see my dad on television more than I do in real life now, which is curious.
Well, you are from a fairly famous family of Frosts. Is that something you do or don't like to talk about?
Oh, I'm very proud of my family. You know, I'm very lucky that way that we've had the kind of success we've had, because it's a tough business. And it's, there's a lot of wreckage left through a lot of families by show business. And so we've all escaped from it or still work in it, you know, with our psyches reasonably intact.
And you worked with your brother on the Twin Peaks series. Mm-hmm. How important was that series for you as a writer?
Well, it gave me my introduction into television. I'd written screenplays before that, but I hadn't actually worked on a show before. So that was the first one I worked on. And I actually started as on the set, being it was done by my big brother. He, you know, wanted to make sure I, you know, started where I should, which was at the very bottom. But it was a wonderful experience. David Lynch is a truly curious individual. And he's one of those few people that all the cliches and stories you hear, that nearly all of them are true.
So he does have a uterus in a jar.
I think he probably does. I've never seen it, but he does have a lot of strange things in jars. And he has weird obsessions about the fear of cream corn and things like that. I think Mel Brooks called him Jimmy Stewart from Mars or something along that line, because he comes off as a very sort of regular country sort of guy, and the longer you talk to him, you realize that something's changed here. It's not quite that picture at all.
So was it an unusual experience or exercise for you as a writer working on that series, or was it just a part of your profession learning the ropes?
Both, because I did several scripts for them, and then I also wrote the the autobiography of Dale Cooper. So I had him in my head for quite a long period of time, and it was a lot of fun because it became kind of a social phenomena for a year, which doesn't happen much for television shows. And it was totally unexpected. No one really thought it'd go beyond the first half a season. And it did, and it was just a weird ride.
So do you have a preference as a writer then? The big screen, the box, the novel?
Oh, I'm happily living in the world of novels. Television is a very tough business, and it's changed a lot than when I started it.
How was it writing from the perspective of a woman? I know this is the fourth in this series with your detective who's head of homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Why write from a woman's perspective?
It started, I think, because I learned storytelling from my mother and my grandmother, who were the storytellers of the family. So I learned to hear stories from their voices. So it's always been kind of a natural. The first screenplay I ever wrote was about a woman character. So I'm for some reason, I'm very comfortable in that voice, and I find it more interesting for me as a writer to explore it from that different perspective, because it's, I know I talk to a lot of men who are just flabbergasted by the notion of even thinking about doing that, which I find very curious and kind of amusing, frankly, that it would just terrify some guys to even think about going into that direction, and I find it totally enjoyable.
I just want to go back to this creepy thing. Other people who don't like thrillers talk about that being why they don't,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to feel that kind of thing, and they particularly don't want to go into the territory of torture,
right?
Which this book does go into.
Mm-hmm. It's a curious question, that what is it inside of us that wants that? And if I totally understood that, I'm not sure I would be writing these anymore, because it's probably a lot darker than I want to even think about. At a very simple level, it is an amazing form of entertainment, that thrill of being scared. And I think from a writing perspective or a reading perspective, it's rarer to get that than where you usually get those sort of fixes, which is on the screen. There are not that many books that I've been frightened by. So when it does happen, it's a very intense feeling. And I think, you know, it's the same reason I suppose people jump off of bridges with parachutes or out of airplanes. It's like, why jump out of a perfectly good airplane? It doesn't make any sense to me, but people do it all the time. And there must be some of the same impulses, I think.
It struck me after I'd gotten over the fright of reading the book that there must be a level of enjoyment for you in writing something like this. You know, you can spend hours looking at beautiful paintings or wandering around Pasadena or, you know, visiting churches. How much of a book is pleasure in that sense for you?
Yeah, I grew up dyslexic, so the process, although there are days where it goes very well, is always a struggle. I would not be a writer without computers. It wouldn't happen.
There must be a level of pleasure that is not to do with the writing. It's to do with the other things you do in the course of writing a book. For instance, you must have spent a long time looking at all of Goya's paintings.
Mm-hmm. Well, I spent 8 years working as a museum guard in my early life as a writer. So I walked around looking at paintings all day with a little notebook in my hand, started writing notes for stories, and I did that for many years. So it's a very wonderful place to go to as a writer, to live in your imagination. I mean, I'm very fortunate to be able to do that. Sometimes it's very hard because it also never leaves. When you're in the process of writing a book, you don't turn it off. You know, parking lots are a bad place for me to go driving when I'm working on a book, because something will come to my mind, and there are a few people I've bumped into over the years that probably weren't too happy with me. But it's an enjoyable process and also a difficult one.
Just avoid him in a parking lot. I think that's what we gain from that, as well as other things. American author Scott Frost speaking to the book show's Kate Piercy. And Don't Look Back is published by Hachette Livre.